Mark, thank you. This is certainly a pleasure and honor to be here. Appreciate the invitation. This is my first Beef Improvement Federation meeting. I have tried every year to read the proceedings. I've followed with great interest what this organization does. I have great respect for what you've accomplished in the 40 years. This is the title I was assigned, Non-Genetic Factors That Affect Quality Grade. As I pondered that, thinking that I was probably invited here to be the designated pinata at this birthday party, I had an alternate title that I considered putting on the paper, but I chose not to use that. Let's ask a couple of questions. Okay, I've got a couple of questions, and they're going to be a little bit redundant to what got asked yesterday. I wasn't able to attend that session, but this question, I think, matters. Compared to 10 years ago, how economically important is marbling now? More important now than 10 years ago, similar or less? Okay, most people say more important. I would agree with that. I don't know across the entire industry if we figured out how to manage that. I think we're all trying. We're trying to look for ways. That's the next one, Mary. All right, which segment of the industry contributes the most to enhancing quality grade? Okay, in other words, relative to quality grade, who's doing the most good? Is it genetics and seed stock? Is it at the cow-calf level? Is it backgrounders, feed yards, packers, processors, or some other area? Okay, now a follow-up question, and we'll show you the answer to both. Which, using the same segments, who does the most to screw things up? Who does the most to wreck quality grade? This being a perfectly randomly selected audience, I'm sure that... Okay, what do we get? All right, so who does a good job? All right, genetics and seed stock are helping us, and feed yards help a little. All right. Who does the most to impair quality grade? Looks like we all take our share. Feed yards maybe are thought in this audience to do a little more to hold things back than others, but we all kind of have a share. Okay, thanks. Okay, over the long term, okay, and for me that's 10 years or more, which segment would benefit the most, and I'm talking about economic benefit, if we could increase marbling dramatically industry-wide, who would get the most benefit? Use the same six segments, please. Packers. Oh, might that explain why we're not making any progress? Somebody else is going to make the money. Now I understand. Okay. By the way, I understand the moderate cow thing, too. As an outsider, it's not hard at all to figure that out. Marianne doesn't have these questions. Raise your hand if you think that when you drink, you generally drink in moderation. Okay. Now, who was here at 8:05 this morning? Okay. Just a question. Okay, we have one more. Let's take a look at that. Okay, which holds the greatest promise, not for marbling, but for improving consumer satisfaction with beef? Okay, just the consumer saying, I like beef. Which holds the greatest promise for improving that? Is it genetic selection for marbling, genetic selection for something else, altered management practices for palatability, postmortem technology? And I didn't let you have other here. I'm going to force you to pick one. Dan says a trick question is one that students get wrong. A good question is one I don't have the foggiest idea what the answer is. I'm just curious what people think. Okay, so the biggest number there would be selection for some other palatability-related trait. Well, I hope we can find that. I think that probably is the right answer. I don't know yet what that trade is or how to select for it, but I know there's a lot of work in that area. So hopefully we can find something. And this would be, I would guess, the organization that would drive that forward. So let's see what happens. All right, let's go back to work. We're going to talk about quality grade today and marbling a little, but mostly quality grade. And I want to give you a little background from where I speak. We believe at VetLife, we believe very strongly in both research and population data. We think that either one of those is strengthened immensely by the presence of the other. From a population standpoint, we've got a bunch of it. We have a program we call the VetLife Benchmark Performance Program. It's a service that we provide to our customers, and we have about 40% of all the U.S. fed cattle in that program. We get carcass data on most of them. The carcass data include both cash and grid cattle, so it's a nice sample from that standpoint. And the data come generally from the common feeding areas, Kansas, Texas, Nebraska, Oklahoma, some Iowa would be our main areas. So that's, when I show you data and I talk about benchmark, that's the database I'm talking about. Something like 75 million cattle in there over the history of our company. And a little history, this looks just a little bit different than what Dan showed. He showed USDA data. What I'm showing is our data, so it's not exactly the same data sets, but I think they look pretty close together. Carcass weight. The blue line is steers. The red line is heifers. On the bottom axis, you've got years. And so carcass weights have, in our database, have trended upward. Days on feed have tended upward. And not just, or in fact not at all, because of lighter placement weights. We're taking cattle of similar weight and feeding them longer. If you look at, in this case, we're able to slice our data very thin if we want to. These are 700-pound steers or heifers. And over this period of time, days on feed have increased. Probably that'll come back a little bit with the corn prices we've got, and 06 is the last full calendar year I've got, so 07 I imagine will come down a little, but that's where they've gone. Fours and fives have increased. I think Dan pointed out a couple of the reasons why, and there are some others. But not just fours and fives. What about fours and fives for 700-pound steers that graded between 40 and 69% choice? And the cattle cannot get that much fatter and still grade the same. Something else has gone on. Cameras, quality audit, spanking the graders. There's a variety of things that have gone on to do that. But this is the reality. The problem is it's probably right now. So that's, in my view, an economic reality that we have to deal with and live with going forward. And in our hands, percent choice has gone down a little. The creative scaling there makes it look a little worse than it is. But it's gone down a few points. So we've made the cattle bigger. We've fed them longer. We got them fatter. And not quite as many of them are graded. That's something we seek to understand. So let's talk about, other than genetics, what are the things that could influence that quality grade? And here are four general categories. One is demographics. One is pre-feed yard nutrition and health. Another is feed yard nutrition and health. And then the final is endpoint selection. And I'm going to spend a few minutes on each of those four. On the demographic side, the first thing is steers versus heifers. You see here data from averages from our database, steers and heifers. As you know, you didn't have to come to this meeting, but boys are different than girls, and that's true in terms of carcass data as well. Heifers have, you see the asterisks, several categories where they are more valuable than steers and some where they're less. They tend to be lighter in terms of carcass weight. They have more premium grades, more choice cattle, fewer penalty grades. They have fewer ones and twos, which is a negative. They have more fours and fives, which is a negative, about the same in dark cutters. They have more lights, fewer heavies. Okay. All of those things should make some sense to us. I do think it's important to understand that most of those fatness-related differences between steers and heifers, in my view, are related more to endpoint than they are to a true difference between the males and females. I think we just don't get the steers as fat as we get the heifers because they're too big if we do. Okay. Placement weight is another demographic factor, and these are generally flat lines. If they slope at all, they slope downward. But we've got steers and heifers from 500 to 800 pounds. If you go outside those range, you don't have as many cattle, and you get some odd results. Heavier than 800 in the grade really gets pretty bad. But the point here is that there's a significant amount of conventional wisdom that will tell you that calves don't grade. Now, 500 pounds in our database does not specifically mean that they're a calf, but the fours and fives are much more likely to be calves than the eights and nines. And they grade as well or higher. Simply won't accept calves don't grade. Just won't. Okay. Here's some data from Steve Smith at Texas A&M that's about to be published, and he provided it. This is intermuscular fat. There's a line for calves, a line for yearlings. And calves get to any intermuscular fat endpoint in terms of calendar age much earlier than youth. Well, that makes sense because they're put on feed right away. But what else do we know about this? We got Dr. Berger and Dr. Faulkner here in the room from the University of Illinois. They put cattle on feed at 100, 120 days. They make cattle with pretty high genetic capability to grow 95% choice under birthdays. Okay. We can do remarkable things with quality grade in very young cattle. We do something pretty good with calf-fed Holsteins that generally don't live to be 400 days old and sometimes grade very high. Age is, in my view, not the difference between our production systems where some grade well and some don't. Okay. Another demographic factor is where are they fed? We don't know where they're born. You guys would have a better handle on that for cattle. But we do know where they're fed. And in general, the northern fed cattle tend to grade higher than the southern cattle. Midwest and North Plains, that's basically all of Iowa, Nebraska, Colorado. The Central Plains and High Plains would be all of Kansas, Texas, Oklahoma. And you can see in the box the grade numbers for steers or heifers, choice and prime, are a little higher for the northern cattle than the southern cattle. Are they northern origin? We can't always tell. So we don't know that that's northern genetics, northern something or another. We just know that where they go to harvest, and you know, there could be greater packer differences too, I suppose, but in general, the northern cattle grade higher. Now, one of the demographics that really matters, and if you're going to get in the business of selling grid cattle, you have really got to get your arms around this one, and that's seasonality, because it matters. It matters a lot. The top line there is heifers. The bottom line is steers. And what that shows is that if you harvest, that all the heifers harvested in January or February or March grade higher than the rest of the year, and those harvested in the late summer, early fall grade the lowest. Same is true in steers. The population doesn't look exactly like that. It has the same seasonality, but it differs a little because of another demographic factor, and that's that we don't kill an equal number of steers and heifers every month. The mix of steers and heifers changes from month to month for a variety of reasons that you probably all understand better than I, but we don't have the same proportion each time. You can also see, looking at how different those lines are, where another demographic factor, which would be just be the proportion of heifers, when we have a few years of heifer retention versus liquidation, can impact what the national quality grade, the national percent choice is. Just are there more or fewer heifers than typical, that can matter. Okay, so you can see where all these demographic factors, if we are or are not making genetic selection, if we are or are not improving genetic capability or the management practices, we still have some demographic stuff that can influence in the short term what the grade looks like. I would tell you that over the long term, I don't think there's any real change in the demographics. Okay? Generally, we have the same number of heifers over a period of time. Seasonality gets distributed across the years. Placement weights get distributed across the years. So I don't think long-term changes in quality grade can be attributed to any of these demographic factors. The seasonality is really interesting to me. Now, why is that? I don't think it's because of differences in weight from year to year. Our data would show no real change in placement weights. It is due to differences in sex group because some years we have more heifers than others and some months we have more heifers than others. I don't believe it's due to age. Photoperiod, yes. Clear research that would show that more daylight creates more muscle and less fatness and to a lesser extent marbling. And so that's something that we can see. Heat, maybe. I'm not so convinced in there. I think the month effect has more to do with photoperiod than with heat because we see it at all levels. And because photoperiodic effects on feed consumption, you can track by region that the further north you go, the more distinct they get as the daylight changes more from winter to summer. Vitamin A and D, and Dr. Berger's an expert on this, but because of lush pastures and what vitamin A does to developing adipocyte, because of what vitamin D does when they get a lot of sunlight, I think those things are at least mechanistically involved, and I think grazing cattle in lush pastures can be a negative for ultimate marbling just because of that. We're just beginning to learn some of how that might work. Okay, so that's the demographic side. Let's talk about what happens to them before they get to a feed yard and what might that do to us. Earlier, everybody in this group took credit for sending healthy feeder cattle to feed yards. Okay, so all of the people who didn't come to this meeting are the ones that are screwing it up because they're not all healthy when they get there. Okay, and I would imagine that this organization probably contains people who do pay a lot more attention to that. But we have to admit that every year 10 or 12 million cattle wander out of the hills from somewhere, and they're all unplanned pregnancies. We don't know anything about their genetics. We don't know much about their health. Okay, some come with an older brother in the same truckload. There's a lot of things we have to deal with in this business. So when we look at one thing we can quantify in our database is what did the person who received the cattle think about them in terms of risk? Okay, and so that's what we're going to see here. And you got low, moderate, and high risk cattle here, and that is a producer distinction. Okay, there's no biological measurement there. It's just they decided they were this or that or the other. And what you can see is that when you go to the moderate and especially to the high risk cattle, they graded lower. And they didn't grade lower because they didn't get big and fat enough. The carcass weight was actually the highest for the high-risk cattle. They perform a little slower. It takes longer to get there. They're on feed a long time. But they get just as big and fat as the others or more, but they don't grade as well. I think it's generally recognized that being sick at any point in your lifetime is a negative for marbling. This is an indirect indicator that if that has happened, if they come in with high risk, that's the case. You can see the death loss and that antibiotic percentage is a treatment rate. You can see that there's a lot of drugs and a lot of death loss going into those high-risk cattle. And in my mind, those are sick cattle. We don't know which ones necessarily, but there's a lot of them there. Now, here's the good news and the bad news. This is percent choice by vet med charges out of our database. And this is a subsample of all of them. These are light steers, okay, 4 or 5 weight steers, I believe, 4, 5, and 6. And on the bottom axis, you see medicine cost, and that includes processing, so that's not all treatment. But it goes from 0 to a high number, 50, I guess. As you go from left to right, you're talking about more medicine, more sick cattle, and the line goes downward, and that line is quality grade. So that fits everybody's bias. We all know that cattle that take a lot of medicine, ergo sick cattle, aren't going to grade as well. And this line shows that very, very nicely. All right, that's the good news. The bad news is that line, that's the means. There's just a little variation around those means. This is then the individual data points that comprise those means. And so look at the $10 medicine group. That's between $10 and $14.99 of medicine or processing. That's not much medicine, okay? And they range basically from 0 to 100% choice in that category. Most of them are in the middle, but they range from 0 to 100. So when Dan quotes Dr. Lush, I really enjoyed that. What was it? Variation is the tool that the breeders work with. Boy, have I got good news for you. There's a lot of variation out there. Okay, it's immense variation. It's unimaginable variation. In any of these categories, you go basically from 0 to 100% choice. So while the mean fits our bias, any individual result, we can't really use that data. It isn't a predictive tool. Okay. Now, let's talk about another thing that happens before they get to the feed yards. Sometimes they dang near starve to death. What did it say in the USA Today? A drought for the ages, just this morning's paper. We've dealt with something over the last several years that we have not probably dealt with in the entire history of at least modern beef cattle production in this country. We've had more drought in more areas. Okay, this is the 04 map. Go to 06. Same amount of drought, just different spots. Everybody's had it, at least one of the last 3 or 4 years. Now, what is that? Why am I talking about drought? Okay, what does that mean? Any nutritional insult at any time in the lifetime of the animal is going to impair their ability to deposit marbling sooner or later. And drought causes nutritional insult because of poor milking cows, because of calves that get put on, weaned and put on pasture that where there is no pasture. Okay, we've brought a lot of thin, compromised cattle into feed yards. And we didn't have any choice. It's nobody's fault. What are you going to do about a drought? But that has really impacted the incoming condition. Of course, feed yards love that. Feed yards love that because they like those thin cattle. But from a grade standpoint, that's a real negative. I'm going to quote one of my favorite experts. We all know Robbie, okay? And here's what Robbie says. When it comes to quality grade, if the cattle have potential for compensatory growth, you're screwed. Okay? And I think that's right. Okay, so go back to that drought map. That, you know what that is? That's thin cattle. That's compensatory growth. We love to feed those cattle. Okay, we get the first 40 pounds free if they just take a big drink. But they're not going to grade. They're just not. Okay? All right, let's talk. So that's all the stuff that happens before the feed yard. Then we get to the feed yard. Then I figured, and sure enough, then we wreck them. Okay? Then things really go bad grade-wise. Now, one thing is intake. Energy consumption, marbling is fat. Okay, fat comes from excess calories. And so you got to have some calories. So does the amount that they eat influence their ability to deposit marbling? Yeah, to an extent. This line, this is for light steers again. From left to right, we're going from low feed consumption to high feed consumption. And the grade line goes up. It's a little flat on the lower end where maybe they are all a little compromised in their ability to deposit marbling and excess calories. But again, look at the variability around those means. The means become somewhat meaningless. It shows us a trend, a relationship we can understand, but it's not a predictive trait. Grain processing is one thing that we spend a lot of time as nutritionists talking about in feed yards. It really influences our cost. It really influences efficiency. Does it or does it not influence quality grain? Well, intake is regulated by grain processing method. Increased intake is going to be observed with coarser processing, like rolled versus flaked, for example. And differences in conversion are going to result from that intake, not from the gain. That gives us increased metabolizable energy if they eat more. That gives us more KPH, more sub-Q fat, but in general doesn't change the other carcass traits. So cattle slaughtered at equal endpoints show no difference in marbling despite the grain processing method. There are a few studies show the opposite of that, but in total, that if you get them to a certain endpoint, they'll grade the same, irrespective of what the grain processing method was. Okay? Now, here's one we've had some fun with. What's the other big thing that's happened in the last 5 years in the business? Okay, it's ethanol. There's an ethanol plant on every corner and another one planned. Okay, and then that has received some scrutiny as maybe something that's going to diminish quality grade. When we feed the byproducts of those ethanol plants, corn co-products, and distillers' grains. So, there are several reviews, and all of the authors willingly admit that they'd like more data. I picked this from Chris and Alfredo. I think they've got it pretty well right. They have three bullet points at the end of their summary. First, at low yield grade endpoints, in other words, lean cattle, co-products seem to reduce marbling at any inclusion level. But at an endpoint of yield grade 3, co-products have no effect on marbling up to 20% inclusion level. Okay, so for lean cattle, maybe so. For middle-of-the-road cattle, probably not. At high yield grade endpoints, okay, fat, co-products increase marbling at low to intermediate inclusion levels. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of things at work. This is not a clear conclusion. I wish there was a simple answer to this. Okay, but it's very difficult research to interpret. The variation from one product to another, from one plant to another, from one inclusion rate to another, with and without flaked, is there fat? I'll just tell you, strong statements are dangerous due to plant-to-plant and other sources of variability. Okay, don't make strong statements except for that one. All right. Now, what about implants? We know implants affect quality grade. We're going to talk about that a little. We have, in addition to our population data, we have a database of all the published research on implants, 325 studies that we add to regularly. We can look at and ask it questions. 579 different comparisons of some implant to a negative control, where a comparison is a treatment group, not a study. And the average is a 16.2% increase in daily gain and 10.8 percentage units of grade loss. That's the average of 325 studies, 579 comparative groups. So we know that implants can, the way we do them, okay, the way we do those studies, constant day endpoint, which is, by the way, the wrong way to do it, but the only practical way from a standpoint of either managing a research business or funding research, we got to do it that way. But we don't get them to the same endpoint. And then we're a little bit surprised they grade less. But sure enough, they do. But there are ways to do better than that. For example, if you look only at steer studies where they got trenbolone acetate, but they didn't get 200 milligrams of it. Okay, and so that draws a distinction. Some of you that are familiar with the products, it excludes some products, but includes the most of the cattle. There you can get 19% improvement in gain and only 4 percentage units of grade lost. And by adding about 75 pounds to those cattle, you could get rid of all four of those points of grade loss. But sometimes cattle get too big when we do that, so that's not necessarily practical. So there's a sort of a closer to a win-win situation, but not everybody does it. Here's the other thing that's pretty close to a free lunch. Heifers respond much differently, especially to TBA, than steers do. And generally, we can get pretty good performance responses in heifers without a whole lot of quality grade reduction. So when we counsel our grid marketing customers, we talk a lot about are you going to sell steers or heifers, which way are you going to go with which, where can you be aggressive implanting, where can you not. And there are really some distinct differences between steers and heifers. I want to talk about the long-term trend for implant use, and has that influenced what we see in quality grade? And so I looked at our data, and each of these are two-year samples just to get bigger numbers in each one, beginning with 1999 through 05-06. Implant doses is the first one. That's basically how many times did we implant the cattle in the feed yard. And that's gone up just a little. Maybe it was highest in 03, but we implant cattle generally. Most of the cattle get re-implanted, not all of them. TBA doses, that has steadily increased during this period of time. But because we've got lower potency TBA products, intermediate doses, because we're moving away from that 200 milligram dose in some cases, when you assign a potency score to the entire implant program, that's not gone up. Actually, feels a little bit like it's going down. We've got maybe just the littlest bit less aggressive. We've added more days on feed, and so when you look at the number of days per dose, that hasn't changed. So those more implant doses are just a function of more days on feed and a few more cattle getting a re-implant. We haven't really changed. We haven't made a material change that would be more or less aggressive, at least during this period of time. So any population changes in quality grade up or down, probably not a function of what we're doing implant-wise. Okay. Another thing we commonly do is feed melangestrel acetate to nearly all of the heifers. Some kind of old data, but means of 13 studies would show 18 pounds more carcass weight and 4.5% more choice. Here's a growth promotant that actually does improve performance and gives us a little bit of positive. A little more in quality grade than we would expect from 18 pounds of carcass weight. Seems to be slightly preferential for marbling. Okay. More recently, ractopamine hydrochloride, Optiflex, you're familiar with Paline in pigs. Optiflex is the name of the product in cattle. Elanco's done some nice work with this. And what they see is generally no difference. These are marbling scores. They report percent choice, same thing. Steer studies, control versus treated, or heifer studies, control versus treated. They've not seen with that product any significant differences in marbling scores. So there's one that gives us a little performance, does not seem to materially affect quality grade. We'll have some other choices over the next few years that may have a dramatic effect on quality grade. So far, what we're using doesn't fit that description. All right, let's talk about the last thing, and that's endpoint. How long are we going to feed them? Well, this is Ty Lawrence's data, 65 or 6,000 individual carcasses just thrown in piles from 0 to an inch of fat. And the blue line says that as they get fatter on a population basis, they tend to grade higher. They have a higher percent choice. But and then the red line says that once you get past about 6/10, they start to have some fours. At 8/10, half of them are fours, which is just what the equation says they should be. And beyond that, you've got lots of fours. Right around 6/500 of an inch of back fat, there's a real reduction in the rate of increase in percentage choice. What you get for going fatter than that is not nearly as good as what you get for getting up to that fatness endpoint. And remember, this is from individuals with that fat measurement. If we're going to look at populations, pens, that have an average fat thickness, we'd get a different chart, but I think it would have the same shape, but it would have a different slope, maybe an intercept. But what that says, there is a point beyond which getting them fatter does not much good for quality grade and some harm on the yield grade side. Okay. We see some of the same sorts of things in our data set. These are 700-pound steers, the blue line, 700-pound heifers, the red line, fed to, and this is just outweight. So did they weigh 1,000 or 1,100, 1,200 when you kill them? And you can see the grade went up. Grade tends to increase as you make the cattle heavier, and the fours go up too. Makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. Here's 400-pounders. Here's the fours. Fours go up. Makes perfect sense. Looks just like everything else. But the grade doesn't. 400-pounders respond differently to increased weight than the 700-pounders. Maybe it's because they're younger. Maybe it's because the genetics are different. I don't know. We can't make some of these blanket statements. Get them fatter. Make them bigger. This will happen. It might. It might not. The answer is only going to be true for some of the cattle in the population, and we don't always know which. Here's one of my favorite things. We identified very early in our benchmark program. There was no research to confirm or deny this. We had to spend our own money, and thankfully, when we did, we got exactly the same answer. The blue line says that when you feed steers longer, their grade goes up. Okay, we all know that. We've all done lots of serial slaughter experiments. We always use steers. For some reason, we didn't do heifers. When you look at benchmark data or our research in heifers, beyond about 110 days on feed, a yearling heifer will not increase in quality grade. She will get fatter. We'll have more fours. She won't increase in marbling. She won't increase in quality grade. Not sure I fully understand why that is, but it's certainly a real thing that our industry and our customers have to use as they manage their cattle for grid programs. All right, let me wrap up with a few key points. Key point number one, marbling deposition is a lifetime event. It's not just the late stage of the feed yard phase. We all learn, if you're as old as I am, you learn, boy, that here are early maturing fat depots, late maturing fat depots. At the end of the feeding period comes the marbling. That's true to some extent, but it's way too simple. Marbling is deposited or can be deposited every day of their lifetime. There are, we've learned recently, non-differentiated cells in the muscle that can be stimulated to become intramuscular adipocytes, okay, marbling. And it appears that process can be enhanced or blocked by nutritional factors. In other words, for the first time ever, we've got something that may give us a chance to go beyond what we thought the genetic capability to marble was. We may be able to manage to something greater than we would have thought they could be by recruiting these stromal cells, turning them into adipocytes, making marbling out of them. Okay. Key point number two, marbling is separate from subcutaneous fat. Okay, there are different tissues with different regulatory pathways. That's one of the big discussions with distillers' grains. Do we get glucose? Do we get lactate? Where does the energy come from? In what form? Where does it go? It's possible to get more external fat without more marbling. It's also possible to get more marbling without more external fat. And we need to do a lot of work to understand that better. We're working on it. Point number three, any nutritional insult at any time in the life of the animal will reduce marbling. Just will. Okay. And so whether we work with cattle feeders like I do or feeder cattle producers like a lot of you guys do, if you want to get the benefit of that marbling, either in a feeder cattle price or in a fed cattle price, you got to make sure that they've been healthy their whole life, healthy and on a positive energy balance. Otherwise, they're going to be compromised. Okay, and that's true no matter how big and fat they get. Okay? All right, here are what I call three beer arguments. Okay. If you can both agree with only one beer, it's not an argument, okay? Then you're just talking. But these are things we can talk a long time. Calves don't grade. That one's lots of fun. I have several friends that we talk about. Black equals anger equals marbling. You guys know better than I that that's not necessarily the case. Feed yards wreck grade. Distillers' grains wreck grade. Packers don't want cattle to grade. Those are lots of fun to discuss. This last one is a little bit serious. And for those of you in the academic community or the research community, let's please report both marbling score and percentage choice. Either one of those tells us a little something. Both of them tell us much more than either one alone. So when I go back and try to analyze dozens of studies at a time, a lot of times you get stuck. I got 8 with marbling score and 12 with percent choice and only 2 with both. Then you're hosed. So let's please do that. Okay? All right, I'll summarize the biological part of this. Marbling deposition is a complex biological process with multiple controls, some of which are very poorly understood. Okay, we've got a lot of work to do on the biology side of this. Second, simply making cattle fatter is not a reliable way to increase marbling. Third, while marbling is related to numerous other traits, none appears very strongly causative. And fourth, numerous non-genetic factors affect quality grade. That's the biology. Here's the business side of it. Demographic factors affect quality grade, but tend not to change over time. Management can affect quality grade. Energy intake, feed ingredients, implants, other growth promotants, all those things can affect quality grade. Health and nutrition can affect grade. And I really want to ask the question, have pre-feed yard events compromised the ability of individual animals or groups of animals to grade before we ever get our hands on them in the feed yard? I think probably so sometimes. Okay. And I would also say that premium and penalty quality grades need to be reported. It's much more complex than just percent choice. We can't just look at that number anymore and do the arithmetic on whether we've made more or less money, whether we've increased or decreased carcass value. We need to look at premium grades like prime and CAB. We need to look at penalty grades like standard. Okay. Two things to take away, then I'm done. Okay. First, there are no obvious non-genetic trends that would have resulted in a significant increase or decrease in population quality grade, with the possible exception of drought. We may have had enough drought in the last 4 or 5 years that should have reduced grade some. Other than that, none of the non-genetic things that I look at have changed enough to have changed the population grade. Okay? And second, tremendous variation in this trait indicates that almost any result is possible in terms of quality grade, but almost no result is predictable. And that means we've got some work. We've got that variation to work with on the genetic side, but it's a very challenging trait to work with, irrespective of what part of the business you're working in. With that, I'd like to thank Justin Gleghorn. Dr. Gleghorn put a great deal of the effort into preparation of the talk and the paper, and appreciate his help very much. And I'll shut up. Mark, next.
Thanks, Pete.